Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. Welcome to Hour 2 of Live the Promise. So glad you tuned in. And if you just tuned in, you missed my first hour conversation with Bible scholar Ron Rhodes. I have to tell you, there's not a Bible question he's not been able to answer yet. He just had so many great answers today. You might want to go back and catch the podcast on our website, myfaithradio.com. Well, now we're switching gears, and here's a question for you. Do you have a strong-willed child, otherwise known as a powerful child? If you've got a strong-willed child, I want to hear from you. Call me now and tell me all about them. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. Whenever I am speaking and I'll tell funny stories of Luke, he's grown now, but he was our powerful child. Somebody will come up and say, I have a Luke, and her name is Janice. So what about you? Do you have a Luke? I want to hear from you. 877-933-2484. I've got Dr. Kevin Lehman joining me today. I love the title of his book, Parenting Your Powerful Child, Bringing an End to the Everyday Battles. I think you're going to find some encouragement here today. Let me tell you about my guest, and we'll get the conversation started. Dr. Kevin Lehman is internationally known psychologist, radio and TV personality, educator, and speaker who's taught and entertained audiences worldwide with his wit and common sense psychology. He's written more than 40 books, including The Birth Order Book, Making Children Mind Without Losing Yours, and I think this one's a New York Times bestseller, Have a New Kid by Friday. Dr. Lehman and his wife Sandy live in Tucson, Arizona. They have 5 children, 2 grandchildren, and you can find his resources on our web at myfaithradio.com. Dr. Lehman, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, so let me get this straight. You had a Bible teacher on, and now it's degenerated to me?
Yep. Exactly. I'm teasing.
Well, we've gone downhill here, yeah. Haven't we?
You made that way too easy, just saying.
Yeah.
So we love to start out our conversation talking scripture, and I'm wondering if you either have a life verse or just a verse that maybe God's been speaking about these days.
Well, let's see. Well, I got a chapter, but it'll take you a little bit to tell you about it.
You can paraphrase.
I love the book of John.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you were a heathen and now you're a Christian, my advice is just read the book of John over and over and over again. There's some great stuff in it. But John 2 is one of my favorite chapters. And if you recall, folks, it's when Jesus performed his very first miracle at Cana in Galilee.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great setting because Jesus' mother is there, Mary, and the disciples are there. And they're at a wedding bash, to put it bluntly. And they run out of vino. They run out of wine. And I love this because Jesus' mother comes to Jesus. Now, I'm going to paraphrase this, so I'm so glad that Bible teacher is not with us. I'm going to paraphrase this, but they run out of wine. Jesus' mother comes to Jesus and says, hey, son, do your thing. And it's really funny because Jesus is clearly irritated. And he turns to his mother and he says, woman, he called her woman, what have you to do with me? And he separates himself from his mother. And it's really one of, I think, most interesting chapters in all of God's Word. Because what does Mary say to Jesus? Does she say, what did you say? What did you say? Do you know who you're talking to, you little snot? I am your mother. I gave birth to you when I was 14 years of age. I've asked you a simple thing now. Get over there and change that water into wine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not what the scripture says. She turns to the steward and she says, do whatever my son tells you to do. In other words, she put the tennis ball life back in Jesus' court. And then one of the mysteries in the Bible is, even though Jesus said no, We read on, and we find out that there were six ceremonial, you know, water containers that were used for Jewish ceremonial purposes. And Jesus, all of a sudden, voila, changes the water into wine. And what's really interesting is the guy tastes the wine, and he says, wow, you're different from most. This is top-shelf stuff. This isn't that cheap stuff they sell down at 7-Eleven. And it's really interesting. I think it's verse 9. It says, and the disciples believed that he really was the Messiah. Over in John 14, we see another instance, I think, that will help your listeners, Susie, where Jesus gathers the disciples together, and he knows it's time for him to get on the cross. And by the way, did Jesus want to get on the cross? 100% human, 100% God. Okay? Keep that in mind. Did he want to get on the cross? No, he didn't. And he tells everybody, hey, listen up, guys, I'm out of here. I'm going to go prepare a place for you. And I love this scripture because, quite frankly, Susie, it reminds me of Kevin Lehman because I am so dumb sometimes. And Thomas comes up first and he says, Lord, we don't have the foggiest idea what you're talking about. And then Philip gets in the act. And Philip says, yeah, good point, Tom. Show us the Father, and then we'll know. And Jesus says, Philip, after all this time you've been with me, you don't know who I am. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. So, folks, if you ever felt like you don't measure up, you're not good enough, you know what? I would tell you this. You're in pretty good company.
Mm.
Because you couldn't find 12 dumber people than the disciples.
Nobody says it like you, Kevin. I'm just saying.
Well, it's sort of funny to say it that way, but I think that's what happened when I read it.
I do marvel at Mary saying, do whatever he tells you. I mean, that little exchange is very, very intriguing. Well, you open your book with a dedication to your family, and you write, each of you a powerful force for good in your own unique way. Kevin, I'd love to know how your kids showed themselves powerful when they were young. Give us a couple examples.
Well, my firstborn, you know, we practice on the firstborn. The firstborn is the lab rat of the family. She's now a principal, by the way, of a very tough school. But when she was 11 years old, Susie, I ran over her big time at the breakfast table. And I wasn't thinking, and I just sort of shut her down and told her who the boss was, kind of thing, as many of us men do. And she looked at me through her tears, and she said, do you know what you ought to do? I'm sure how stupid I am. I said, what? She said, you ought to read your own book.
Wow.
But so, you know, all kids seek attention, okay? And all kids are going to get attention either positively or negatively. When they don't get attention in a positive way, they obviously seek to the negative, and that adds to discouragement in the kid's life, and before long, the kid becomes powerful. Now, you had mentioned the word strong-willed in your introduction, and I'm here to tell you, you want your kid to be strong-willed, because you want your kid to be able to say no to a peer group that says, you know, smoke this, snort this, drink this, it's good for you. But the powerful child is different from the strong-willed child. The powerful child has to win, has to have the last word, and he or she is willing to take herself down just to prove the point that you are not the boss of me. And one of the things I've tried to do in so many different books I've written, Susie, is to get parents to see that the authoritarian lifestyle that most of us as parents live in the U.S. and Canada is counterproductive, and it's not reflective of God's teaching one iota.
Unpack that more for us, Ron. Even just explain and break it down what that looks like and why it's not biblical or helpful.
Well, here's the brave statement. There's only one way to rear a child. Now, when you say that, you're painting yourself in the corner, but let me explain. Most of our methods of rearing children are based upon superior-inferior relationships. I'll take you back to 1960, which historically is not very far, how long ago. And there was a guy who thought he could run for president of the United States, but most people thought he could never run for president of the United States. Why? Because he was Roman Catholic, that's why. And there was an unwritten rule that Catholics couldn't become president of the United States. Well, his name was John Kennedy, and he defied that, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And I would remind people that the Civil Rights Bill was passed in 1964. But in 1960, the totem pole mentality in our society, is sad to say, was white people were better than people of color. Men were better than women. Adults were better than children. And so our means of rearing kids is really rooted in authoritarianism. Now, before any of you climb all over your phone, let me remind you, at least you can think about it, is God an authoritarian? Does God grab us by the scruff of the neck, twist our earlobe, and say, "You will acknowledge me"? No, but his word says that he is the ultimate authority, because it says that every knee shall what? Shall bow. So we've got three types of basic parents. We have the authoritarians, which many Christian parents tend to be. We have the permissive parents who are knocking themselves out, falling over each other, trying to make sure their child is happy, happy, happy at every turn. And if you rear a kid in an authoritarian manner or in a permissive manner, I can guarantee you that both of those children will rebel sooner or later. So the authority, and I think that's what St. Paul is trying to teach us in Ephesians chapter 6, is really the way to rear children. You stand in authority over children. You don't let them run over you, but you don't beat them into submission either.
We're taking a short break, talking to Dr. Kevin Lehman about his book, Parenting Your Powerful Child. Maybe you've got a question about rearing your powerful child, and even a greater distinction between strong-willed and powerful. Kevin will make that on the other side. And we're going to talk about the loud and aggressive, the temperamental, the curveball, the quiet and shy. You know, the quiet and shy child can be a powerful child and even use their quietness and shyness to get their way. We're going to talk about that. Give us a call if you've got a question, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484, or email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. More with Dr. Kevin Lehman in just a moment.
Strong-willed children are those that are not very inclined to follow their parents' instructions and instead just do what they want to do all the time.
I guess it's the child's drive on, I guess, what he wants to accomplish later on in life that makes him strong-willed.
Because of their genetic makeup and because of the concept of original sin.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Talking to Dr. Kevin Lehman, parenting your powerful child. And before the break, Kevin, you made such a good point that strong-willed is something we actually want them to have. I think that that term has been coined for these powerful kids, but I like what you're saying so much better. In fact, this quote from your book says, "Your powerful child, no matter what age or stage, is powerfully affecting much more than you think. He's a child who's orchestrating your entire household by his antics or the fear of his antics. She's the one who so frustrates you that you take it out on other family members because you don't want to face a blowout with her, and it's exhausting." I'd love for you just to talk about a sure sign that your powerful child has too much power in the home.
Well, how do you feel once your child goes to school in the morning?
Okie dokie, then.
I mean, a lot of times you just feel exhausted. I mean, if you had your pastor hiding in the closet listening to things that you say to your son or daughter, just trying to get them out of the house in the morning, mm-hmm. you'd be embarrassed beyond belief. And here's the kicker for all your listeners. If you have a powerful child, you have to come to grips with this statement. There's a powerful parent nearby. Now, and let me just show your listeners how easy it is to teach your kid to be powerful. Take little 16-month-old Fletcher. And little Fletcher is about to have his num-num, his goodies, his food. And Dad picks him up to help with the process to put him in his little high chair. Now, for whatever reason, little Fletcher decides that he's not interested in sitting in that little chair. And I'm telling you, a 16-month-old is able to contort their body in such a way that it is physiologically impossible to get that little 16-month-old into that high chair. And if you've reared kids, you know what I'm talking about. Now, Mom sees that her husband, Roger, is struggling. And she says, honey, Roger, just give him to me. I'll take him. And she takes him and plops down little Fletcher on her lap and proceeds to feed him his num-num. Now, everybody, you be Fletcher for just a few seconds. Would you rather sit in that cheap chair they bought at Walmart or sit on Mommy's warm lap? And do you see how innocently we create a powerful child? He learns, she learns, that if I just do this little something, whatever it is, 3 o'clock in the morning, water, water, I want water, you know, and kids will do it to you. And once you bring him water, oh, it's even funny if he's really powerful, that's bathroom water, I want kitchen water, kitchen water. I mean, if you got a powerful child, I'll tell you, they are so skilled. They know how to punch your buttons up. They know every fast food place in town that they want a whale in the back seat when you drive by. They want a treat. I mean, they just got you on the run. And so I challenge parents that you really have to have a game plan. And because they do, kids, powerful children certainly have a game plan. Their game plan is to win, control, and dominate.
Mm. And so if our goal is to get through the moment versus see long-term and think long-term, we're basically feeding that power within them, aren't we?
Yeah. So you start with the end in mind. You know, the guy, Steve Covey, he just passed away this year, as a matter of fact, but he was a great business writer. Happened to be an LDS guy, by the way. And he said, start with the end in mind. Well, that's a good thought. If you want to rear a responsible child, then you grant that child responsibility early in life. Everybody gives back to the family. I just wrote a brand new book, just was released, called Have a Happy Family by Friday. In one of the huge sections in the book, in the key to having a happy family by Friday, is changing the words you choose to use with your kids. I mean, if you've got a problem with a son or a daughter, especially a powerful one, stop asking the kid questions. Don't ask him any questions. Oh, Dr. Lehman, excuse me. I've admired your work for years. Mm-hmm. I've read a couple of your books. I've heard you on Focus on the Family several times. But I must respectfully disagree with you. I think it's very important to ask your children when they come home from school how their day was. Okay, let's go through that. Hi, Melissa. How was your day, sweetheart? Fine. What'd you do in school today? Nothing. Teenager. Where you been? Out. What'd you do? Nothing. Save your breath, parents. But tell me more about that. That's interesting. And that's a command, but it doesn't put the defenses up. And by the way, for all you women who are listening, us husbands hate your questioning. I repeat, we hate your questioning, and we hate the why word. Put those two things away, and you got a happy husband on your hands.
Okay, so follow that through a little bit with both the husband and the kid, where you stop the questioning. play that out and what that looks like. So they're using their silence as their defense mechanism, so you're kind of saying two can play at that game, so
they,
to speak?
They do. If all of a sudden you change, and again, anybody who's ever read a Lehman book, it's really clear there's no warnings in this book. So you don't say to your kids, all right, everybody, listen up. 0800 tomorrow morning, you're going to see a new mom and dad. No, the fun part is blindsiding them, quite frankly, and catching them off guard. But when you don't go through the dog and pony show that you usually do, many times after just a short period of time, a kid will say to you, Mom, is everything okay? Life's fine. Wonderful. Great to see you. I mean, they don't know what to say because we've trained them, so to speak, to throw us a bone. These kids that come home today, Susie, they come home and they answer the mindless questions. They go to their bedroom. They slam and click their door shut. They get on their iPhone and they text their buddies like a woodpecker that's got ADHD. And they systematically shut us out of their life.
Okay, I'm going to read this email that you got from a listener. I thought it was our reader. It says, like father, like son, my 17-year-old son, Brian, is as stubborn as my ex. Anytime I ask him to help out around the house, I get the brush off or the I'm busy right now, I'll do it later thing. But he could spend all day working on the old car that his dad helped him buy. Then one day I heard you talk about stubborn procrastinating kids. I put my plan into action. I didn't ask Brian for anything for a whole week. I didn't do anything for him either. By the end of the week, his laundry was piled up and there were no leftovers in the fridge to grab. He was looking a little puzzled. He came in while I was making a salad for myself and said, Mom, do you need help with anything? I almost laughed out loud. Your suggestions really work. P.S. Brian found out that he could cook, and yesterday he even took my car in to have the oil changed without me asking. Blow me down.
Well, see, now, and God bless that mom for sharing that. You know, here's what parents don't understand. Kids actually want to please us. Now, for those of you who are running off the road, get a hold of the wheel and get back on the road. Let me repeat that. They actually want to please us. We need to give them opportunity to give back to the family. See, I think it's the smart parent who says to their kid, now again, I'm the one that says don't ask a question, but now listen to the words I use, okay? Technically, it's a question. Honey, can I ask your opinion about something? Now, kids will always give their opinion. And when you say that, what are you saying to the child? You're saying, I value what you think. Now, if you're a single mom, you're going it all alone. There's no one in the bullpen to help you out. And you're driving an old clunker car, and it's just about done. And you've got a kid that's halfway mechanically minded. You'd be so smart to say to your 13-year-old son, your 12-year-old son, honey, we need a new set of wheels. And you know, Mom, I'm clueless when it comes to cars. Would you do some research for me? I can't afford a new one, but I'd like something that's relatively new, and I don't need all the bells and whistles, but you know, you'd probably know better than I what things we really need on that car.
Wow.
I'm telling you, the kid will bolt out the door trying to help you and please you.
Hmm. Talking to Dr. Kevin Lehman about his book, Parenting Your Powerful Child, Bringing an End to the Everyday Battles. We'd love for you to chime into the conversation. We got a few copies of this great hardcover book to give away. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. Or email Susie at myfaithradio.com. We'll take your questions and we're going to unpack the different types of powerful children. Sometimes you just think it's the loud and the aggressive one. It's not. You might be surprised. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
When I think strong-willed, whether it applies to me or to anybody, there's definitely an element of my way or the highway kind of thing. Like, this is, no, I'm going to do this the way I want to do this because I'm right. You're not right. And whether or not they're correct about that is another matter entirely, but they think they are.
Now put that in the context of a two-year-old. I'm right, no matter what you think. We're talking about the powerful child, how to parent a powerful child. Dr. Kevin Lehman joins me today. We've got a few copies to give away. If you've got a question about parenting your powerful child, I love that term so much better than strong-willed. As Kevin says, you want a strong will, because especially in this day, you want your kids to have a will to stand up for what's right, to say no to what's wrong. 877-933-2484. So let's talk about some of these types of powerful kids, and then you just lay out very practical advice for each of these. The first one is the loud and the aggressive one. Explain how the loud and aggressive, I mean, that's other than the obvious ways, but really exerts power in the family system.
I'll be glad to, but first I got to comment. You're such a nicer person than I am, because, see, I wouldn't give those books away. I would sell them.
You would?
Yeah. You are so kind to give those books away, so I hope people will call up.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, this guy or girl, you know, it's not just boys that are powerful. Believe me, there's girls, you could beat them with a stick and they're not going to give in. They're easy to spot because they're loud, they're aggressive, they're just easy to spot. But here's what you have to understand. As that gentleman said earlier, about winning, you know, if somebody wins the relationship, you both lose. If somebody's winning your marriage, you lose. And so the idea is not to win, and you have to understand that any act of fighting is an act of cooperation. And I go back to this powerful kid has a way of making you pay. It's hard to avoid a powerful kid who is slamming doors in your house. But here's my suggestion. When a kid slams the door, you can take the authoritarian approach, Susie, and you can say, hey, young man, don't you slam the door in this house. You know, that's the authoritarian. Or you could say something like, oh, honey, excuse me, I'm not sure what that slam door meant. Did that mean you're sick of living in this four-bedroom home with all the amenities of life? Just checking. In other words, if you're dealing with a hormone group kid especially, they're weird 24/7, you know. So don't pour kerosene on the fire. Your daughter rolls her eyes. You ask her to do something. Hey, don't you roll your eyes, young lady. And you read that as willful disobedience, and you're going to train up this child, and you're going to beat him with a stick. Hey, parent, let me give you some insight into that one. Oh, honey. That was so good. Would you do that on again? Do that in slow motion. That was wonderful. And what it does, it just takes the sting out of the air. It recognizes that parents do have a sense of humor. And I'm telling you, I do shows like The View in New York, okay? I'm telling you, if I didn't use humor on that show, I would be chewed up, spewed out like fodder, F-O-D-D-E-R. And humor just take situations and makes them softer and makes them manageable. So this powerful kid, you psychologically want to step over the child. I tell a story about my son coming home at dinner time. He's 15 years of age, and he announces, Susie, announces, I'm getting an earring. Well, I wish you could have seen Mrs. Uppington. That's my pet name for my sweetheart of 40-plus years. She looks at me like, Kevin Lehman, would you say something? And she's pointing to her ear. You know, I said something glib like, pass the green beans. And every time Kevin turned away, she again pointed to her ear like, would you do something? And for 3 days, she railed on me, okay? And finally, I didn't know what to do, but on the third day, I showed up at dinner table with an earring on.
I just saw that coming. I don't know how I saw it coming.
I did it. And I thought for sure he'd see it, Susie. No, he's 15. He's wolfing down his chicken, okay? So finally, I mean, I didn't even like the stupid thing on my ear. So I reached over in such a way as that he would clearly see my ear. And all of a sudden, his eyes narrowed. And he looked at me and he said, you look absolutely ridiculous. And I said, really? I said, your mom likes it. And I'm telling you, when my wife heard that, I mean, you would have thought she said, He said, I love Satan, or something like that. She just went off the deep end, I'm telling you. So I think sometimes you have to decide, you know, what's a molehill and what's a mountain.
Okay, let's take Amy's call from Valley City, North Dakota.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Thank you for all of your insight into it, because we tend to fight fire with fire at our house, and it doesn't work very well with the authoritarian approach. My question relates to bedtime and a child who is 12, almost 13 years old. And bedtime is still a struggle, and I don't understand what we've done wrong. He will push everything to the last minute and whatnot. I'm wondering if there's a point where we say, you know what, you can choose your own bedtime and suffer the natural consequences. However, I don't know that we have a lot of natural consequences that he would encounter.
Yeah. Well, I think you're getting on the right track. Is it Amy? Did I catch that right?
Yes. Yeah,
you're getting on the right track. You know, this eating, sleeping, and going potty are three areas that parents do battle with their children needlessly. Okay?
Okay.
Now, to try to help you with 12-year-old, usually with 12-year-olds, there's a routine. Again, I go back to kids actually want us involved in their life, and they want to have, you know, some kind of a routine, whether it's tuck them in, pray with them, tell them a story depending upon their age and all those kind of things.
Right.
And if you will just take action and not words, and you get one shot at tucking a kid into bed under the parental terms, once it goes off track, you're on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Mom, come and tuck me in. Honey, I'm not tucking you in. I'm done. That's all you say. And that kid will freak out. You've thrown him a curveball, you know, under his chin, so to speak. And, yes, there is a consequence for not going to bed on time. They're usually grumpy the next day, and we end up paying for it again, and that's why parents are so adamant. With young children that get out of bed, and, you know, they want water, and then they want this, and they need that, and Daddy tucked me in now. Now it's Mommy's turn to tuck me in. Call Grandma. She only lives a mile away. Have her come over and tuck me in. I mean, powerful kids are great at needlessly involving us in their life. And there's a time where you just make it quick, make it simple, and move out of the area.
Amy, are you saying, like, once you get the bedtime established, she just doesn't go to bed? Just stays up in her room?
It's been the same bedtime for a long time, and he will just wait until the last minute to brush his teeth and whatever, so that instead of 9:30, it's 9:45, you know? It's like it has to be his terms on how he does stuff.
So what
I'm getting from Mr. Lehman is that, you know, I could say, you know, if you want me to tuck you in, I will be there at 9:30. If you're not there, then you lose it.
That's right. Now, that would be a good move. But just don't get involved with all of the, did you brush your teeth? I mean, I'm telling you, if I had your 12-year-old on the phone, they could tell me every word, every sentence that you're going to tell them before bedtime, at bedtime, and when you've reached your frustration tolerance point 15 minutes after bedtime.
Right.
They know exactly what we're going to say. So one of the things you can say to 12-year-old when they're delaying and all that, you just say, you know something, I'm done, but I want you to know something. I'm very disappointed in what's going down here. That's all you have to say. I'm very disappointed with what's going down here. Turn your back and walk away. And I'm telling you, Amy, when you do that, you are raking coals over that 12-year-old. And they don't like it when mom or dad is upset with them.
Right.
So there's your discipline.
Okay, Amy.
With young kids, for all you mommies that are listening that have a little 4-year-old that keeps getting out of bed, hold the door. They will freak out. They'll kick the door. They'll have a big meltdown. 15 minutes later, they're finally quieted down, open the door very slowly. I say very slowly because they're behind it with their blankie. and watch what happens. Four-year-old will negotiate like a Philadelphia attorney. Mommy, mommy, leave the door open and leave my nightlight on. And honey, I'll do that, but you need to stay in bed. You cut your deal once with them. And once they know that you are willing to stand in authority over them, see, I can't make them go to sleep, but I can make them stay in their bedroom.
Right, right.
That's the point.
Amy, thank you for that call. I appreciate it so much. God bless you. Call us back and tell us how it goes. Carmen is calling in from Austin with a question for you. Carmen, welcome.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, you got a question for Kevin today.
Yes, ma'am, I do. My daughter has recently adopted some children, and one of the boys, four, five, and she's having a lot of difficulty with them, and I just was wondering how your research is going with adoptive parents and how the children can respond. She wants to do well, and she's having some serious issues, and so I've been familiar with you, and I was just wondering if there's some things that she could do or how your research on that, if we got to your books and things to help her, would be.
Wow. Well, if you've been following me, you know what I say about you parents who adopt older children.
Yes.
You have bitten into the whole enchilada.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got 4 years, 5 years of sometimes neglect, sometimes abuse, mm-hmm. But most of the time not an ideal environment. And you end up paying for that. And you have to take the long view, because these kids have everything from abandonment issues to you name it. And you have to strive to be as even-keeled as you can be, with a sense of firmness, with an expectation for the positive. But you're going to be disappointed most of the time for a while, because the kid is going to disappoint you. You can reach out to love this child, and I just want you to understand, the most probable thing that's going to happen when you reach out to love this child is that you will be bitten, because they have learned in life early that people hurt them. So you have to win their trust over a long period of time, and you do that with both commitment of husband and wife, to stay on the same page, not to be overpowered by this child, and they'll try to do that, trust me. And you have to be united shoulder to shoulder. So you speak the truth in love, you're action-oriented, but you don't let the child run over you. And that's always the key, whether that child is adopted or not. But with adopted children, especially older children, you really have to make sure that you bend a little bit, but you don't break. You do not put that child in authority over you, even though they'll do their best to do so.
Well, Carmen, thank you for that call. God bless you. We're going to make sure you get a copy of Dr. Kevin Lehman's book. Really appreciate that so much. Talking to Dr. Kevin Lehman about parenting your powerful child. I saw a few emails come in. In fact, Jessica says, listening to your show and little Fletcher and Dr. Lehman's example sounds like our darling daughter. What do we do to get on the right foot? Dr. Kevin Lehman will answer that and your calls in just a moment. 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
I think a child is naturally strong-willed.
If, say, their parents are strong-willed, they're more likely to be strong-willed. If they really, really want something, children are pretty good at not giving it up.
So I feel like a lot of it just stems from a desire for independence, I suppose.
We are talking about that powerful child. This is your last time opportunity to call Kevin, this last segment of the show, 877-933-2484, talking to Dr. Kevin Lehman. And Kevin, we got this email in, and this Nicole writes, I love listening to Dr. Lehman. I'm so grateful for his perspective and his humor. She says, my daughter's six and had some trauma in the last few months, which has led to custody change where I have her full time. I've noticed since then she's had a lot of extra trouble with impulsiveness and sensory issues. Her doctors told me she has auditory sensitivity. I tend to be an authoritarian, and she obviously doesn't respond to a stern voice. She is a powerful child, and I was wondering if you had any ideas on how to combat the powerful child tendencies with an auditory sensitivity. What do you say?
Well, I'm not a real expert in audio sensitivity, but I can tell you it is real. Kids who are powerful try to inflict their will, and they demand things of us. And sometimes when kids say things that are really whacked out, I think it's so good to look at a kid and say, honey, you know, you could be right. You could be right. Now, are you saying they're right? No. But you're saying you could be right. When a kid comes and whines about their feelings, whatever, whether it's life's been unfair to me or I hate my sister or brother, whatever, what do most of us say? Most of us say, now, honey, why would you say something like that? I mean, don't go there. Just say, honey, I hear you. I hear you. Understand every word you're saying. Yeah. Yeah, that's got to feel bad inside. Now, are you saying you agree with them? No. You just have to acknowledge their feelings. When a kid says he's no good, lots of times they'll come and badmouth themselves, like a whimpering dog. Again, you can say, honey, you know, I'm sorry you see yourself that way. I have to tell you the truth. I don't see yourself that way, but you know what? If that's how you see yourself, so be it. A kid draws a picture and he tells you it's no good and he tears it up before your eyes. I mean, what do most parents say? Honey, now why'd you do that? That was a beautiful picture honey, what was that? You know, I mean, you might just say, honey, you know, I hear what you're saying, that you really don't like that picture. But, you know, from my perspective, I have to tell you the truth. I thought it was quite good. But you're the judge. It's your picture, not mine. And you sidestep that battle. See, the powerful child, keep in mind what I said earlier. When you have a powerful child, what you have to admit is there's an authoritarian, powerful parent around. And again, if you're a believer, you have to remember that God loved you and I so much, he's given us free will. To say, God, stick in your ear, I want no part of you, or Lord, I want you to be Lord of my life. And so keep in mind that, you know, you don't just ram things down kids. You involve them. No one member of the family is more important than the family. And so as mom or dad, yeah, you're the guide. You don't get through the rapids of life without a guide. If you've ever gone whitewater rafting, I'll tell you, you didn't survive. Real white rapids without a guide in that boat. And that's what you have to understand, parents. You're the guide, and there's going to be some rapids ahead. But don't freak out. Keep your eyes on the port of call. You have to know where you're going. And the kids will eventually fall in line and follow suit. What determines your family, and I highlight this in my brand new book, Have a Happy Family by Friday, is the core person you are. More than anything else, that's what's going to determine what your kid is. So with our caller who's, you know, adopted a kid at 5, you've got to be who you are. You have to hang in there, take the long perspective, and sooner or later that kid, even though they have all kinds of issues, is going to come around.
I love the perspective when you're talking about, when you think about our tendency to be authoritarian, where we are telling them, because I said so, we're using our size to get what we want, basically jump higher, get in, whatever, and we don't take into account that they have, to, you know, I'm trying to think of how to articulate this, where we coddle their emotions, we boss them around, but then we don't validate what they have to say, and I feel like you're saying the opposite, that we still are the authority, but there's a way to do that while validating their opinion without coddling their emotions. So it's such a paradigm shift, but it's powerful because it honors them as a person, but it doesn't let them rule the roost, and you said it better than I did, so I'll be quiet now. 877-933-2484. We've got an anonymous caller calling in from Fargo with a question. You're on the air.
Thank you for the privilege of doing this. Susie, what you just said at the end there is exactly what I'm trying to convey. Mm-hmm. Working with a young nephew, 20, and really powerful. And he's working for me. And the other day he faced me off and said, you know, you don't treat me and you don't do this, and you don't do this, and, you know, and I just kind of stood and took it. I didn't defend or anything. I listened and let them air it. But I still want to go have a paycheck still coming. So I want to go talk to him and explain to him that we care for him and this. And but, you know, I don't know how to do it. He's very, well, very, very powerful.
But I think you're already on second base. Don't sell yourself short because you've given him a chance to say what he said. And you know, at 20 years of age, I was a janitor. At 19, I came home from my janitor's job, and I announced at dinner, I can't even say this with a straight face, that I was engaged, okay? And I put $20 down on a diamond ring at Montgomery Ward's, okay? Now, my mother, God rest her soul, she loved Jesus with all of her heart. When I said that at the dinner table, she said, and I quote, she said, "Oh, that's nice. Pass the baked potatoes, would you, honey?" You know what? In 2 weeks later, I was begging Montgomery Ward's to give me back that $20 bill. And, you know, I think sometimes you just have to step over these powerful moments in life. And what I would suggest to you is is it nephew you're working with? Is
yeah.
that what you said? Yeah. When you come back to talk to nephew who, you know, sort of expects to be treated like he's the next heir to the throne, you grant in fantasy what you can't in reality. You know, I understand what you said, Robert. You know, I've heard you out, and wow, I wish I could do all those things for you. But, you know, this is a business, and business has checkpoints and guidelines, and quite frankly, I'm just not able to meet your expectations. And as much as I'd like to, you know, I can't. And I think maybe I'm holding you back.
The burger joint down the block is hiring. You should go try that.
Exactly. Next day, you know, he wanted to be all this, and next day he showed up late. And the next day he overslept his alarm. And it's just a short-term job. It's a seasonal two-week thing maybe, you know. But he begged me for the job, but he didn't show up till halfway through the shift the next day because he overslept his alarm. And I explained to him when we got hired that, you know what, you need to be getting your rest because this will take everything there is out of you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I didn't make a big deal out of being late. I put somebody else at the job. And actually woke up a family member and put them at the job. But today, it's a whole different thing. It seems like he feels a part of the crowd because I didn't really beat him up about this being late. He knows it was a big deal.
Well, I think you handle all things in love. And you tell him, quite frankly, you know, I took you on, and I know it's just summer work, whatever, and I'm not saying this to be mean or nasty, but I have to tell you, honestly, I'm very disappointed. I'm disappointed that you couldn't get yourself to work on time. And if he offers an excuse, I would just say, let me tell you one thing I've learned in business. Excuses make the weak weaker. And I speak to CEO groups, YPO groups, business groups all over America, and they all tell me the same thing. It's hard to get young people to do simple things that you ask them to do. Because kids have this entitlement attitude, and they come into jobs where they love the paycheck part of it. It's the rest of it they have problems with. And part of it is because, as a nation, we have coddled our children. We haven't held them accountable. I would remind everyone that we are 28th in science and math worldwide, the U.S. Why? Because too many kids don't go into math and science because it's too hard. And we've coddled kids to the nth degree, among other things.
Well, anonymous caller, thank you for that call. You sound like such a good man. I hope we have an extra book to send your way. If not, we'll send you something if you give Grace your address. Dr. Lehman, we just have a moment left. I appreciate you. You make me laugh. But I'm wondering if you would pray for all. I'm still getting emails from parents who are struggling with their powerful child. Would you just pray a blessing on our listeners who have powerful kids? Yeah.
I'd be glad to. Lord, you are the creator. You are the supreme authority. I just pray that every listener today will look in the mirror, do a little gut check, and ask themselves, hey, am I an authoritarian parent, or I am in healthy authority over my child? Lord, we need help. It's so counterculture, but we know that you're the creator. You have a purpose for our lives. Let each of us live up to the expectation you have for us to do a good job, not a perfect job.
Amen. Look forward to having you back to talk about your brand new book, Have a Happy Family by Friday. Thanks for your time today, Dr. Lehman.
My pleasure, Susie.
Yeah, you're a good man. Well, you've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. You can find a podcast of both hours up on our mobile-friendly website, myfaithradio.com. Remember, October is Pastor Appreciation Month. Nominate your pastor. He and his wife just might win a week-long getaway with Sunscapes Retreat. Check it out on our website, myfaithradio.com. I'll meet you back here next time.